Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. This week I'm gonna segue from last week's fascinating interview with Teyokusin Ghost Horse, talking about his book Children of the Sun and his recently started Akantu Institute, and can segue to my recent book because a lot of it was influenced, or part of the shaping of it comes from listening to Teyokusin and his interviews with his radio show, First Voices Radio, and hearing his talks, and generally from a native perspective, things that have helped reshape my thinking and my lifestyle and affected my writing. And so one of the first obvious things that people know about, yet is so overlooked, is the land. Now, I'm going to talk about my recent book, but I'm focusing on some of the highlights of the native information, for lack of a better word, at the moment. And if you know my work at all, you know it's kind of all over the map. And so I touch on native aspects and Zen Buddhist ways and Kabbalah and other traditions and lifestyles. And while my writing style is kind of all over the map, that is an important aspect of what has reshaped my perspective, which I think still people have a hard time admitting or connecting with, and that is literally the map. And I have a copy of the map up on my wall. This was First Voices Radio did an interview with Aaron Carapella, who has the Tribal Nations maps, where he shows all the original peoples in various parts of the world. So after I heard that interview and I got one of the maps, and it was mind-blowing to look at what anybody who's grown up in the U.S. educational system and seen the 50 states and blocked off in little odd geometrical square and otherwise shapes, is really, it's a layering. It's like Playboy airbrushing of reality. For 1492, as Teyokusin has mentioned, there were 6,000 native nations and as many languages here. So Aaron's maps help to show the original peoples, and just to look at the map, even without reading a thing, just to see what that is changes one's consciousness. So that's part of why I refer to Native peoples and Turtle Island so much, is because I cannot address anything that happens in this country without addressing and looking at the actuality and the too often overlooked fact of the peoples already here and still here. So it's just entwined in anything that you want to mention about the history, this and that, and the country started 1776 and all that kind of stuff. You can, you know, yee-haw about it, but the native peoples go back thousands and thousands of years, perhaps, 100,000 or 200,000. I think there's been archaeological finds of bones and animals and such like. So it's a vast topic, but I just want to touch on some of the highlights in my book that helped to shape. And I take responsibility for what I put in. I do not speak for native people, and I do make a definite effort to represent accurately what I know and put it in a way that helps share the ideas and feelings that go with it. So the obvious overlooked thing is as a Jewish person, there's World War II and the Holocaust and the genocide, but the overlooked genocide is that an estimated 98.5% of the native peoples were exterminated in what is now called the U.S. Pause to think, feel about that. And people think that's history, but it's still going on. If you read about what's going on with various mining and extraction, and still people like the Navajo and dealing in the Diné people in the Southwest, still dealing with the fallout from uranium mining and wells and higher cancer rates and It's been called, Charmaine Whiteface calls it the, I think the American Chernobyl. Calls it, yep, she calls it America's Chernobyl. So that's overlooked. That's in a lot in Nevada. The most bombed area in the world, I think, is the Shoshone, the native people. This bomb testing, 814 nuclear tests have been done on their land since 1951. Substantial radioactive fallout has contributed to higher rates, concentration of cancer and leukemia on the reservation. And people think this is awful and terrible and oh, it just happened and stuff. But some of the quotes I put in my book were to specifically show that this is deliberate. This is conscious. All these efforts at, you know, exterminating a people and ruining the habitat, it is conscious choice, and it's still going on today. Here's one by Jeffrey Amherst. You will do well to try to inoculate the Indians by means of blankets, as well as to try every other method that can serve to extirpate this execrable race. And then in the beginning of the book, I have John Oberle, 1888, the U.S. Commissioner of Indian Affairs. The Indian must be imbued with the exalting egotism of American civilization so that he will say I instead of we, and this is mine instead of this is ours. So, you know, there are these seeds for this thing that is promoted, and you know, I myself get the, you reap the benefits of certain things, being able to buy this and that, or be comfortable in certain situations, be comfortable in living situations and various other societal things, because of this American civilization. So that's part of the hook that I show in my book, is that these little privileges and these comfort zones that we've been given are at the expense of something else. And that's not to say don't enjoy or feel guilty, but it's to widen the perspective and look at the bigger picture. And another quote, a Civilization Fund Act was an act passed by the United States of Congress on March 3rd, 1819. A combination of Christian missions and the federal government, federal funds were allocated to schools designed to educate Native Americans in the ways of the white man. The goal was to, quote, civilize, which by the word root is means to citify, of the cities. And as Tjokesen mentioned in my talk with him, 70% of natives now live in the cities. So there you have, this is why I study history, because it helps to understand what the heck is going on and why it's going on. 1819, a Civilization Fund Act. By the word root, Citification Fund Act. And now, you look at the effects. This is how sneaky and sly the assimilation mode is. Because basically, as I mentioned in my book, there was two prongs. There was just extermination and assimilation. Those are the two methods to either try to wipe out a people or to assimilate them into the dominant culture. So to citify Native Americans by getting rid of their traditions and customs and teaching them reading and writing in the missionary schools. Passage of the Act helped define a class structure within Native American society. While traditional Native Americans opposed the schools, progressive ones accepted the schools. Their education and command of the English language propelled them to leadership positions within tribes and ultimately led to policy shifts and treaties that ceded land to the United States government. So there's the ultimate thing there. This whole thing is to get the land, to cede the land to the CEDE, ceded land to the U.S. government. And that's another hook. The whole kind of Hollywood, those who want to be noticed and be the you know, in the moment, be sort of Hollywood and famous and progressive. But if that's at the expense of ceding the land, then it's duplicitous. And one of the focuses of my book is to show how the Bible that was first brought over to Turtle Island and the ensuing school system, as I write, both the Bible and school, slick plays to convert behavior and take more land. So that's part of what my book is about, to show how this whole systematic stuff, the printing press and then the Bible and then the way the books were, book culture overtook, you know, much of the consciousness, and how that has, you know, we're still dealing with the side effects of all this stuff. And then I write, in my book, I write, the shutting of gates that were already open and connecting Earth energies with spirit worlds happened when the book, colonizers and their missions, along with commerce and government, began to enforce who could and who could not move freely, enforce who could and who could not learn what. Native people's access to their own sacred sites utilized for ceremonies was in places cut off and still is to this day. The letter of the man-made law was declared more important than the natural law. Yet the old ways are being activated again. In fact, they never went away. It's just that too many people stopped paying attention. Too many stopped moving through the gates, either because of ignorance or fear or because they were forced to stop. And that's another one of the, about the simplest way I could describe the message of my book is the word distract, which the word tract comes from tract of land or tract of water, and dis, D-I-S, is apart from. So to distract is apart from land or water, and that is in essence what all this stuff and the civilization and the schooling and all this stuff that's mentioned is a distraction from caring for the land and the water. Because those are the primary energies, and that's what you'll hear if you listen to Native people, who you'll hear that over and over and over again, because that is where their consciousness grows up with. And then to show what was before the book was actually the trees, and here's another quote from my book. This traveler's Lakota friend told him, after being asked, what do Natives know about inner bark? He said, a 14-year-old Lenape girl told him that the moon phases, best times for plantings, and what's happened in the past, along with preparing for the future, can be read from a piece of bark, and that doing so requires a certain age of tree, not too young. And the girl is taught by her grandmother, who is also a birch tree scroll interpreter, to also see the unforeseen. Then he added, why try to reinterpret what Mother Earth is saying? Good question. Why are we always trying to reinterpret and reshape and writing books and stories and poems and all that stuff when the direct messages from the trees, if you know how to read them, that's an advanced skill, but at least getting a feel or tuning into them is a start. So that's part of what my book is about, is trying to remind people of these traditional ways, and perhaps we can have some balance from the excess an excess of stories, which I love, and books and printing and poems and all that stuff, which I love, but also it, at the expense of, say, the trees, then it's not worth it. Then another fascinating book that I had read was about the origins of the book in Indian country, and I write, the roots of the modern mass marketing of books, magazines, public relations, media propaganda, and selective educational texts can be found in the following quotes. By 1774, when Sampson Ockham, the first Native American to publish his writings in English, produced a choice collection of hymns and spiritual song, he appears to have begun to see print as a way to, quote, forge a corporate identity. So not only there is already assimilation going on with a Native person writing about hymns and spiritual songs, but it becomes the writer as an author began to become, as it says, a corporate identity. So fast forward to all the branding nowadays. And then the second quote, emerging market strategies that guaranteed mass circulation via missionary print providers and examples of the printed matter, the Bible, tracts, primers, hymnals, geographies, and spellers. And here's a key one. As for the distraction from the land and forest, by the 1800s, the enforced paradigm became literacy education as a passage between civilization and wilderness. This signaled a significant shift of consciousness out of direct experience and into the classroom mind games. The language reflects this because the trees are considered a problem, hence someone saying, we're not out of the woods yet. So literally, that started in the 1800s, the consciousness that guides what you do today, or that misguides what you think and do today, is in part due to a shift when the promotion of the quote says, a passage between civilization and wilderness. So the wildness of this land is the original energy and the quote civilization, which one of the roots has to do with city and the suppressing of the wild and the pagans and on and on. So that's the dichotomy or the paradigm that was instilled in our thinking and then into our educational systems, into the religions, and all that promoted by the book. So basically, my challenge was to use a book to show this stuff. Another example of the book, here's one of the novels, an epigraph in Hale's 1927 book, Northwood, A Tale of New England. He who loves not his country can love nothing. So the whole sense of national identity and country was superimposed onto the native lands. And that's a part of the conundrum that we're dealing with today. And that's why the map that I was gracious enough to be allowed to reprint in black and white in my book, The Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, shows all those nations to remind people that this is where we are, that I find even sometimes learning one word or one phrase from native peoples is like enough to mull for years. Like another native friend mentioned a word, it's like a greeting that translates to like may the fire within you burn bright. I mean, that's just the level of caring about the inner and true person shows through. So that's the kind of way that the languages are so powerful, and that the attempts to control the language, which we see today, where we, like nowadays in the news, the Nazis have been rebranded to be called far right. Because if you read far right, you think, it's just far right, far left, far right, whatever, compared to, you know, Nazi or some other intense word. So the language is so powerful that is part of what also the Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest is about, is to kind of deconstruct sense of how many people's consciousness has been shaped by the English language, and how we in many ways have no clue what we're actually talking about. Hence why I get the book has a lot of etymology as a way to look at some of the origins of the words that we speak, and to have us pause and think before we do it, to think about if we know what we really know, or to know what we know about, and if the words actually reflect how we feel. And I'll leave this edition with one more quote here. This is from another book. See, I didn't really write much for this book. It's mostly quotes. Now, I did write a fair amount, but there are a lot of quotes in, this is in so-called Southeast Alaska. The native cultures that evolved in the region, the Tlingit and Haida, along with the Tisimishian, I don't know how to pronounce it, who migrated into the region in 1887, accepted that everything has a spirit, including trees. These native cultures independently developed practices and ceremonies regarding the spiritual relationship they have with the land, including the tree people. So that is one of the, you know, big premises, big theses, whatever you call it, of my book, is to celebrate and to open up, refresh, update one's consciousness, that when we look outside, wherever we are, that just even to see the trees is not just a pretty tree, but there is umpteen layers of cosmic connection. There's a quote from a study in Edinburgh, Scotland, about trees growing the most at nighttime because of the stars or galactic cosmic rays. So there's such a as above, below intertwiningness of all this stuff that has just been so squelched and so limited by the narrow-minded consciousness of, as the U.S. Commissioner of Indian Affairs in 1888 wrote about the I, or the ego consciousness, is really, when you get to the root of it, it is the culprit. Because if you can shift people to think about themselves, rather than to think about the we and all that is happening, then you change the behavior. So if I look outside and see the individual tree and I think of myself, then I'm looking for how it, you know, this and that, how it pleases me, what I can write about it, and this and that. But if I look out and I see, oh, there's the tree and the bush and the grass and the sky, and I am just one small part of that, then it becomes a we, which transforms everything. So that's something to think about. All right, take care and be well. Thank you for listening.